The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
It's Wednesday, February 22nd, and welcome to another episode of The Ben Jarofsky Show. It's Monroe Wednesdays on the show. That means Monroe Anderson's here, and he's got a special guest with him, Tiffany Walden of The Tribe. The Ben Jarofsky Show is brought to you in part by SEIU Healthcare Illinois Indiana, the Chicago Federation of Labor, the Chicago Teachers Union, and Chicago Reader. ChicagoReader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago, where to go, what to do, what to eat, what to drink, and so much more, including columns from your very own Ben Jarofsky. And hey, if you want to help out Ben Jarofsky, and if you want to help out yourself, find some more columns, find some more extras, head over to ChicagoReader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Critical Race Theory Paul and Wednesday, and here's why. Well, I've been telling you guys for the last several weeks that Paul Vallis is a MAGA man. I've been telling you guys for the last several months, that Paul Vallis spent most of 2021, 2022 courting MAGA. We all know he's got the consolidated MAGA vote in the city of Chicago. It's probably enough with his support on the lakefront and the Gold Coast to make him put him in the runoff. So Chicago, I just want you to come face to face with who you want, apparently, at least on the north side and the Gold Coast, on the northwest side and the southwest side, to be your mayor. Okay. I'll preface this by saying this is generally a Democratic town when it comes to presidential elections. 85% at least of the city of Chicago have voted for, let's just run it down, 2020, Joe Biden, 2016, Hillary Clinton, 2012, Barack Obama, 2008, Barack Obama, 2004, John Kerry, 2000, Al Gore. How about that? I just did that from memory, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not even using notes. All right. So you're a Democratic town, Chicago. 85% of you, at least 15% of you, love MAGA a little too much, but you love that. That's it. That's the breakdown. Here's the man you're about to make as mayor, Chicago. I'm just saying this. This is Paul Vallis in 2021 with Wire Points, which is some right-wing outfit, talking about critical race theory. Here, and I am now quoting Paul Vallis, and I'm not going to do a dramatic reading. Monroe Anderson sitting by. It's the first time he's heard these quotes, Monroe, so get ready. I'm just going to do it straight, Monroe, without an invitation of Paul Vallis. Okay? Quote, here's Paul Vallis on critical race theory. When you introduce a curriculum that is not only divisive, but a curriculum that further undermines the relationship of children with their parents, with their families, that's a dangerous thing. Just let me just interrupt. What the hell are you talking about? God damn. What? Undermines the relationship of children with their parents. Anyway, back to the quote. And for white parents, I mean, how are you going to discipline your child when your child comes home and your child has basically been told, you know, that their generation, their race, their parents, their grandparents, they have discriminated against others and they have somehow victimized another person's race? End of quote. That's the man you're about to elect, Chicago. That's your guy. That's your guy. This quote makes absolutely no sense. Just like this, the sense of like white people as victims is really bizarre and twisted, because it's like somehow or other in the mind of Paul Vallis, the man you, Chicago, are about to elect as your mayor, just saying, somehow or other in the mind of Paul Vallis, if some social studies teacher teaches children about our history, meaning slavery, Jim Crow, Edmund Pettus Bridge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that will result in a white child not eating his broccoli. I mean, I'm trying to get it. And I know I struggle, MAGA. I really am trying to understand you. I've always tried to understand you. I'm like, where is your mind at any given time? You know, and I'm really working hard. But I need to know, MAGA, what is the correlation between learning about our history? Learning, for instance, that there was an uprising from white people in 1983 at the prospect of Harold Washington being mayor, just saying. A little history lesson that under Mayor Paul Vallis would probably not be taught in Chicago public schools because it would upset white children. And then they would be disruptive when they got home. But how is that a core? What's the connection between learning history and being rude and disrespectful to your parents? I can't see it, but it's a good thing I'm not alone in this show. I have to help me understand the mind of Paul Vallis. Monroe Anderson, legendary Chicago journalist, comes in the show every Wednesday and is always instructive in helping me understand the minds of MAGA. And a new guest, first time guest, Tiffany Walden, the editor of The Tribe, the online publication, which is on fire in this election, one breaking story after another. Monroe, we'll go to you first. You're our official Paul Vallis MAGA explainer. Please explain to me, Tiffany, you're on deck with an explanation, what the hell Paul Vallis is talking about. Go.
I have known Paul since Harold Washington was mayor. And during that time, he was presenting himself as a liberal. Something happened along the way. Probably an opportunity. That would be my guess. But this is just sheer nonsense. This whole right-wing CR, critical race theory knocking is basically because they know that history in America has not treated African-Americans kindly. So what they're doing is, instead of presenting history as warts and all, what they want to do is present their children with bedtime stories, fairy tales. Once upon a time, there were these people from Africa who immigrated to America, and they got to get free housing and free clothes and free meals. And they just helped the master out on the plantation periodically. But they were very happy.
Okay, so I understand they want to, that there's an urge to whitewash American history. But this is taking it one step further. I'm going to read the quote again, and then we're going to get an interpretation from Tiffany Walden, because I think she can really help us here. All right, here we go, Tiffany, get ready. And for white parents, I mean, how are you going to discipline your child when your child comes home and your child has basically been told, you know, that their generation, their race, their parents, their grandparents, they have discriminated against others and they have somehow victimized another person's race? Please, Tiffany Walden, explain to me the correlation between teaching a child about history of race relations in this country and having a disobedient child who will not listen to one's parents on something like eating your broccoli. Help me out, Tiffany Walden.
I have so many thoughts that I don't even know which one to start with. But where I will start is I posted that quote this morning on my Twitter page. Is going crazy right now, particularly one person in the Paul Vallis camp and mindset, because I know we're trying to understand this mindset. They replied under the tweet and said, quote, "No child should be made to feel ashamed for the color of their skin. Paul Vallis is not wrong," end quote. So the thing about this is, when it comes to whiteness and white children, they should not feel wrong or ashamed, rather, for the color of their skin. For Black children, since we have gained consciousness, from the moment that we gain consciousness, our skin is the only thing that people see from, I don't know, 5 years old on up. So for me, growing up in North Lawndale on the West Side, I have always known that I'm Black. And I have always known what that means. I took the Madison Street bus to go to school every day. I took the Madison Street bus to Oak Park, going from Pulaski to Austin, then to Ridgeland. You see a dramatic difference in the lives of other people who don't live in the neighborhood that you live in. I went to a predominantly Black Catholic school in Oak Park named St. Catherine St. Lucy. We started a basketball team when I was in fifth grade, and we got kicked out of the archdiocese because they said we were too aggressive. We were winning. We won all the games until the championship game. In the championship game, the referee cheated. And that was my first time really understanding how whiteness works. The referees did not call any fouls or anything for us. They only called it for the other school, which was a predominantly white school and team. So we lost our championship game because we were Black. Black girls, too aggressive. That's the end of it. And we could not play in the Archdiocese League the next year. So for Black kids, there is no other history. There is no other narrative. But in school, Paul Vallis being a person who was in charge of schools, we can come in and we can paint these pictures, like Monroe said. You know, Manifest Destiny is a huge fairy tale that white people came in from Europe and saved Indigenous people, saved Native Americans from themselves, saved Black people from themselves, saved the world from itself. That is what history has been. The moment that, you know, a lot of our Black ancestors came in and decided to tell their own stories, the Frederick Douglass, the Ida B. Wells, everybody else in that tradition, then it became, oh, you all are telling slanted stories, when it's really, you're telling the experience of what happened to you. And these people cannot live with themselves if they have to face every single day that what their ancestors did is the reason why there's large populations of Black and Brown and Indigenous people in this country that do not have an equal footing and equal access to things.
Yeah, Ben, one other thing that occurred to me, for these white people that don't want their little snowflake children's feelings hurt, their children listen to rap music. Rap music sells as much as it does because white children are listening to it. Not Black children listen to it also, of course. But I mean, the greater audience is white kids.
Yeah.
And so that makes no sense. It's like they listen to the music, but then when you go to class or something like that, you study someplace, then it's just the opposite of what the rappers are saying. Right. That's nuts.
Okay. And it's crazy because we're in a city like Chicago where a subgenre of rap called drill is one of the biggest, most popular genres of music around the world. You have drill in London. You have drill in New York. You have drill everywhere. Our drill, like, leaders and pioneers, everybody knows their names. House music, everybody knows house music pioneers' names. And like Monroe said, no one wants to understand the history of how this music was created. This music was created out of a resistance to oppression. This music was created, drill particularly, was created because people wanted to tell their story about how growing up in a neighborhood that has been intentionally divested in has impacted their everyday life. So everything about Blackness is cool. And white kids want to wear it. They want to wear our clothes. They want to wear braids. They want to wear afros. They want to have locks. They want to do this. They want to do that. Until it's time to actually understand where these traditions come from. Then it's like, oh, no, we don't need to talk about the history of that. Just listen to the music and vibe.
Like, all cool. Right. So I think I'm going to pass for a moment on trying to get either one of you to explain what the hell Vallas was actually saying in that. I agree with everything you guys said.
He said what he said,
which is just batshit crazy.
That was a signal to the MAGA crowd.
There you go.
That I'm one of you.
Yeah, that's
yeah. I feel your pain. I share your concern.
I agree. That was just a signal. Even if it was just a nonsensical signal, it could just been babbling. I love you, MAGA. I love you. So, all right. Now, I'll start with Tiffany and then we'll go to Monroe with this question. So Monroe and I talk all the time, Tiffany, about the intentions of MAGA on a national level when they invoke rhetoric like this, which is generally an attempt, just to give an example, of passing laws that make it harder for Black people to vote. Okay, so therefore, the Republicans can win the statewide elections in Georgia, let's say, or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania. So there's a very specific political strategy to what they're doing. Paul Vallas is running for mayor of the city of Chicago. One more time, ladies and gentlemen, 85% against MAGA, probably will be in the runoff. Good chance will be our next mayor. So politically, in your humble opinion, when he uses rhetoric like this, what is that a lead up to in terms of policies that he wants to implement here in Chicago? If you follow what I'm saying, in other words, he's using rhetoric like this to get elected. So what does that suggest he's going to do as mayor of the city of Chicago if he is successful in getting elected?
We've already seen the trail of his policies and decision-making over the years. We've seen what privatization of schools has done to Black and brown communities here in Chicago. You talk to people who teach down in New Orleans. I have a sorority sister who was a teacher down in New Orleans. They hate him. They can't stand him. They don't want you to talk about Paul Vallas in New Orleans. So his track record is already there that he's not interested in providing quality and accessible education for Black and brown kids in Chicago. That's just not of interest to him. This privatization thing that he's continuing to push is what he's going to continue to do. And that is not something that is beneficial to Black and brown communities. On top of, he might get in here and also say, well, we can't teach Black history in schools either, because like, why would we even talk about that? That's not even real, you know? So there's just no telling what he's going to do, because yes, he's pandering to the MAGA crowd. But if we learned anything from what we just witnessed with Trump, Trump got in office and was the exact ass that he was when he was running. So not calling Paul Vallas an ass, but it's following in the same trajectory, and that's what we're going to get.
Before I turn it over to Monroe, I follow up to something you said earlier. You got that response on your Twitter from someone who supports Vallas, I think you said, that white children should not be ashamed of their white skin. Has Vallas, I've been on preparing for the show, I haven't seen this. Has Vallas responded, that you know of, to the publication of this quote, which was, this quote is actually, as I said at the outset, is from an interview in 2021. Do you know if Vallas himself has responded? No.
I haven't seen anything just yet.
Yeah, I'd be curious how he twists this one. All right, Monroe, your thoughts. What does this signal the objectives of a Mayor Vallas would be?
He's going to make Chicago great again. it's just what they're doing. You know, and Willie Wilson is and a better. He's aiding and abetting Vallas on this, but what's going to happen if Paul gets in office and the way he's talking and acting is we're going to have occupying forces back in the Black community, police forces, whose job is not to serve or protect, but to control and contain. So we will see a reintroduction of stop and frisk, because everybody's concerned about crime. And when they talk about crime, they're talking about Black people. They're talking about anybody else but us. And I sent you this community network called Next Door, where people get on and talk about what's going on in their community. And what white people talk about in Lincoln Park, for example, is what they are doing. And they don't say they, the Black people, but they say they, and everybody knows who they are. Mm-hmm. And so this is what's going on. And if he gets into office, it will be magnified.
And he's already just to add to that too, he's already mentioned that, you know, he's not into the mandate that police officers and city workers have to live in the city, you know, that they, so he's implied, or I think he's actually said that he wants to see police from other jurisdictions and military come into Chicago and police. That's the same thing that Trump said when he said that the top gang thugs have taken over Chicago and that he's going to send in the military to police the city. So he's already saying these things in debates publicly. And it's only going to get worse if he is elected into office. It will become a heavily policed, almost militarized state.
Well, let's go into that a little bit. I'm going to hold off on a question I was going to ask as a follow-up to something Monroe said. And that, just so let me get out of this without bringing us back to the 1983 election, because as I said to Monroe before we went on the air, Tiffany, I just get that 1983 vibe all over again. I've lived through it once. I can't believe I'm going to live through it again. And Monroe knows what I'm talking about because he lived through it too. And 83, of course, Washington, and then the Up There Before It's Too Late campaign. But the rhetoric of policing, Tiffany, you and I were talking about this before we went on the air. The rhetoric of policing has radically changed in the 2.5 years, I think it's been, since the video of George Floyd's murder. We've talked about it on the show. We've watched it change in real time. I see the commercial I just saw before we went on the air, the commercial that Lori Lightfoot's running against Brandon Johnson to effectively say Brandon can't win because he did a defunder. And then she pulled a quote from Brandon from that radio station whose name I can't remember because they fired me. But anyway, neither here nor there. I always seem to can't remember that name. Hey, Brandon, what are you doing on that radio station that fired me? Sorry about that, Tiffany. I didn't mean to go there. I told Brandon not to go on that radio station.
Isn't that where truth matters?
Unless you're talking about Chicago politics. You're allowed to criticize Trump, and but don't say anything bad about the mayor, Rahm. All right. Anyway, sorry about that, Tiffany. I didn't mean to go there. I can't help myself, as the song says. So, but he mentioned defund, and now she's Lori Lightfoot's running out of a commercial over and over. Defund, defund, defund. He's a defunder. He can't win. He's a defunder. Why don't you go just explain what's happened here? This transformation, like nothing you know what I mean, of rhetoric in, I don't know. It's been 2 years, but I think the transformation happened within like 2 months. But take it away, Tim.
Yeah, it happened pretty quickly, even after the uprisings in 2020. But essentially in 2020, after the deaths of Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and so many others, we had this big racial reckoning moment that everyone swore up and down that the revolution is being televised and that we're going to see changes in ideology around policing. For the first time, I think we saw defund the police become a mainstream talking point. We also saw hints of abolition become a talking point where people wanted to, discuss the entire institution of policing and incarceration. and how we need to move away from that and instead reallocate funding to communities and investing in communities and healing communities. So many people were on corporations. You saw commercials, you saw all of these different statements of solidarity. Everyone was on board with things in 2020, except Mayor Lightfoot. She has been pretty straight up, like, I'm not a defunder. Like, she said that over and over again. But now there's been such a hard pivot away from 2020 that we're now back to, we need more police presence. We need more police on the force. We need more police this, more police that. And Chicago already is has more police per capita than any city in the country. So by definition, we should already be like the safest place on earth, shouldn't we? So us continuing to have this conversation around adding more police into communities instead of actually addressing the root causes of crime, and which comes from poverty, it comes from mental health. We just went through an entire pandemic where we've lost actual people who have died. The Black community was heavily impacted by the pandemic in the early onset of it. People are hurt and people don't have anywhere else to turn to. And for us to still think that policing is the solution to that is crazy. You know, like, we have to start thinking about things beyond policing and thinking about how do we actually go in and heal communities. If you look at safe communities anywhere in this country, they have resources, they have jobs, they have access to jobs, they have just access, period. From when I was growing up in North Lawndale to today, my neighborhood looks worse, actually. It does not, like, it was already bad. It looks worse now. There's less opportunity in the neighborhood. So to me, this whole thing about policing is really just continuing to an effort to push people out of Chicago. I think that there's this, as Paul Vallis has said, we want to take back our city. And in taking back our city, we have to police the hell out of these people, incarcerate them, get them out the way, move them out of the prized areas of the city that Black people used to frequent. Black people used to live in West Loop, for example. Black people used to live in these areas, these pockets of the city where now the rents are, you know, $2,100 and up for a one-bedroom apartment. They're taking back the city slowly, and it's happening with each election. And if we continue to let this fear-mongering of we need more police win, it's only going to continue to happen, and more Black people won't be able to live here.
Okay, then let's go to the gorilla in the room. Vallis is the only white candidate. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is Black, or except for Chewy, who is Mexican. So he's the great white hope. Meantime, we have 7 Black people running for office, acting like the predictable choice is going to be a Black mayor. Back in the 80s, late 80s, when I was Sawyer's press secretary, the assumption, the MO at that time was it was going to either be Sawyer or Tim Evans. Guess what? It was neither. They split the Black vote. And we got Richard Daley for 20 years. I mean, you know, what's happened as a result of that election was that at that time, Chicago was arguably the Black capital of America. When we lost that election, we lost political control. The shift went to Atlanta, slowly but surely, because Atlanta has elected a Black mayor one after the other for decades now. So they have consolidated power. We have given ours away or lost it. And therefore, I don't know what to say. I'm just heartbroken.
Well, We had a, I urge everybody, if they didn't hear yesterday's show with Delmarie Cobb, she went on a riff on this very topic. So I urge everybody to check out that show. Delmarie was on fire yesterday. But the curious thing, and putting the policing issue to the side, the one thing I'm obsessive about is economic development, how that money is spent in Chicago. And Tiffany and Monroe, I have to tell you, really is no difference in how that money is doled out but under Lori Lightfoot than when it was under Rahm or Daley. I mean, the TIF program favors gentrifying neighborhoods. It's our chief economic development tool in the city of Chicago. It's, as long as you have a program that favors gentrifying neighborhoods as your prime source of economic development money, guess what? The gentrifying neighborhoods will prevail. And it was Paul Vallis and Mayor Daley who created Chicago's TIF program more or less back in the 90s. And it was Rahm Emanuel and Lori Lightfoot who embraced it. So I totally agree with Delmarie Cobb when she says it was just, this is the strategy. Mm-hmm. This was the plan. And I know, Tiffany, you're probably thinking, oh, man, you're just some old conspiracy theorist. I don't think
I'm. No, I agree. I've always thought that that was the plan. When I, again, growing up, my grandmother owned the two properties that we had in North Lawndale. And I remember her saying in the 90s that this was when like UIC was just kind of expanding. And I remember her saying, like, you know, at some point, they are going to make it back this far west to Pulaski, and they're going to price all of us out. The taxes and everything is going to price all of us out. And they haven't made it back to Pulaski yet, but they're still moving. We're probably back to, what, California now? It's happening in Douglas Park. There's, like, you know, cool, quote-unquote, white people living in Douglas Park. So it's happening. And it's going to continue to happen, and it's going to get to a point where we just simply can't afford to live in the city no more, or we don't simply have the foundational resources to live in the city anymore. If you live in North Lawndale, there are no grocery stores. You don't have access to a grocery store. Even when I was young, we would drive to Oak Park to go to the grocery store, from Pulaski to Oak Park to go to the grocery store, and we had a car. So imagine people on the bus, taking the bus to go to the grocery store. Like, it's insane. Whereas if you live in Lincoln Park, there's a little cool, like, grocery store probably on your corner with access to fresh food and stuff. You just walk over there every day and pick up your vegetables you cooked that night.
Yeah, no, it's not that good. It's not, but where I live, there is an Aldi's and a Trader Joe, a 7-minute walk from my house. There's a Mariano's, a 15-minute walk from my house. Mm-hmm. And so it's not on the corner stuff, because in Lincoln Park, they tried to have one of those go look or something. There's some new green grocer type thing.
Yeah.
They tried to have it on Armitage, but it didn't work out. They closed there, but they're in Bucktown. There are a couple of them over in Bucktown. So that exists. But the thing is, there are all sorts of goods and services in Lincoln Park that are not on the west side or the south sides of the streets. And that's intentional.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Monroe Anderson fans who are wondering when Monroe and Ben are going to have their weekly Donald Trump MAGA talk, we will get to that. All right. We're doing some local. We're opening with local. But we'll talk about the grand jury in Georgia. Don't worry. We got a lot to say about that.
Lock him up.
We'll get to it. Unbelievable. The grand jury forewoman spoke. Blew my mind. I've never heard a grand jury person like be so open about what's going down. The newsmen of this country are losing their minds. But I want to come back to a couple things before we conclude this conversation and let Tiffany get back to her day. And I'll start with the Tribe article that ran, I want to say it was about 2 weeks ago, Tiffany. Oh, man, did it touch a nerve. And it had to do with Jesus Chuy Garcia and his connections or lack thereof with Black voters. And I had my my realization that there were troubles in paradise in 2015 when I watched in disbelief as Rahm Emanuel captured more than 50% of the vote in the Black wards against Chuy in the runoff and defeated Chuy. Black voters elected Rahm to a second term. I mean, I know I'm letting white voters off the hook because they had already swallowed Rahm's Kool-Aid. So, you know, and now they're swallowing Vallis's. Heck of a job, white voters. But anyway, why don't you talk a little bit about some of the themes of the article and some of the issues that you identified that Chuy Garcia faces when he tries to win over Black voters?
For sure. So one of the questions that we posed was, is Chuy out of step with the progressive movement? And in us talking to a lot of Black and brown organizers and leaders in the community, they said, yes, that he is out of step with the movement. And I think the thing about progressivism is I think people think that once you're deemed progressive, that lasts forever.
Right.
That one idea that you had in 1996 that was real cool in 1996, that street cred for the rest of your life.
Hello, Paul Vallis.
Right. The thing about progressivism, it is a moving body of water. So if you today are not on the wave of what progressivism is doing and talking about, you are no longer progressive. And that is the case with Chuy. There's no denying that Chuy has done some amazing things in his career. There's no denying that Chuy, you know, was a part of the Black and brown unity building in the 80s, along with Harold Washington and Rudy Lozano and all of those guys, and women too. But that brings us back to today, where some of the decisions that he's made have not aligned with progressivism. For one, he's calling for more policing. He wants to hire more police, and that's probably the number one thing that is out of line with where the progressivism movement is right now. He also, I believe, I'm trying to remember correctly, his position on Bring Chicago Home, you know, all of those different, like the peace book, for example. Their organizers are calling for the Good Kids, Mad City peace book to be passed, which is something that would, you know, reallocate funding from the Chicago Police Department to, you know, mental health accessibility, to different, you know, resources that Black and brown communities need in order to thrive. And Chuy said he's not with the peace book. He doesn't, he would not pass that if he was elected. So there's just so many, I think, breaking points that people are concerned about with Chuy that really calls into question his ideas of progressivism. Not to mention that even, I think last week, he just endorsed someone in the 33rd Ward who is endorsed by the FOP. You know, so it's just like, what even is happening here? What is the goal? What is he trying to achieve? And at this point, no one really knows what his ideology is at this point.
Yeah, Tiffany's alluding to the fact that Jesus Garcia endorsed Sammy Martinez in the race against Rosanna Rodriguez for alder of the 33rd Ward. That one caught me off guard for certain. Monroe, you were around when the Black Brown Coalition was strong in the 80s.
Yes.
I think three out of the four Hispanic aldermen in the city council, I'm doing this from memory, supported Harold, and one was with the Verdoliacs.
Right.
So where has it gone wrong, in your humble opinion?
It went wrong when Axelrod handled Daley's election. And what they did, in effect, was take the Hispanic voting block and shift it to Daley. From there, Hispanics, Louis Gutierrez. Louis Gutierrez was a big, bold sellout right off the bat. And that was a shift. It happened then, and it's partially the Black community's fault, because we were at each other's throats instead of joining together and just saying, okay, look, Sawyer, you get a couple of terms, then Evans gets a couple of terms, and we'll just keep it going like that. And of course, that didn't happen.
Yeah. And then Luis Gutierrez used that split in the Black community to justify him supporting Richard Daley. Goes,
right.
They don't even know who to vote for, so I'm just going to cut a deal.
Right, exactly.
Man, that is slick. Gonna blame it on the Black people. As Dumery said yesterday, let's not forget HDO, the rise of HDO that the Daley created in the 90s. It really drove a wedge between Black. Well, yeah, it's sad. It's kind of sad. What was the response, by the way, to that article from the Chuy Garcia campaign? Did you get any response from them?
Of course, they're not in favor of it. But we tried to interview them. We spent a couple weeks trying to interview them. I think from his speech at the City Club, we tried to interview him after the speech and was kind of not given access. We reached out a couple of times to try to, you know, get thoughts and have an interview with him about it, and we didn't get the access. So, we've been to quite a few forums, mayoral forums. Tony had talked to so many people in the community across age range, across ethnicity, and it just really is this question of, is Chuy really moving with the movement? And right now he's not.
All right, Monroe, we're at the final Chicago question before we move on to Georgia and let Tiffany get back to her day, unless for some reason she suddenly feels an urge to talk about the Georgia grand jury, which I kind of feel she doesn't.
Let's handle that.
So Monroe, like I said earlier, I'm really getting a vibe that it's 1983. And I could also make the argument that it's 1989, because 1989 was the take back year. So I can make that argument, 1989 being the year that Richard M. Daley defeated Eugene Sawyer and then Tim Evans. And then they took back City Hall. So that also works. But that language, some of that language, I guess Vallis is literally saying take back City Hall. We opened with his critical race.
Yeah, the thing with the critical race theory is it is a course for postgraduate students in college. And somehow the right wing has managed to make it for second and third graders.
That's true, too.
I mean, it is so ridiculous. But this is what they do. They take something that has a kernel of truth. And the kernel of truth is critical race theory, is that racism in America is institutionalized. Wherever you look, you can find some of it. And so that's true. But then they have taken it and it's our poor, sweet little white children, it's gonna hurt their feelings if they find out that we were lynching Black folks and that sort of thing. It's ridiculous.
But here's the reality. It's just, you cannot have a discussion about American history without coming face to face with racism. So let's say it is just second graders, and you're just giving a quote relatively innocent discussion of Rosa Parks, who's one of the great heroes of the 20th century, in my humble opinion. And then you got to go, she refused to go to the back of the bus. Okay, that's the story that you could tell a second grader or a first grader or whatever, third grader. Then you got to explain why she would have to go to the back of the bus in the first place.
Right.
Like, what was being protected and forcing her to go back to the bus? So that, I believe, is what I'm trying to read Paul Vallis's mind. He's getting at when he says it would make white children feel ashamed.
Vallis is pigbacking whatever off of DeSantis. That's what he's doing with that thing. That's just a whole DeSantis thing, and he's going, oh yeah, well this will work. It works working in Florida. Let me try it here in Chicago.
I don't know, Monroe. You may be giving him too much credit. You may be like, oh, he doesn't really believe it. I'm assuming that if he said it, he believed it.
But there's so much. I think there's so many dots.
Vallis knows better. Vallis is bullshit. He knows better.
He may be, but he still, to me, he still said it. And I'm like, I agree.
Oh, he said it.
He said it. You got to own it unless you disown it.
And the thing is that a lot of these people are still alive today. Like, if we really get down to the nuts and bolts of it, like Emmett Till and the white woman that got him killed, that woman is still alive today.
Yeah.
And you have to have that conversation. I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming she has children and grandchildren and stuff, but can you imagine you live down the street, you're a little white kid, you live down the street from the woman that got Emmett Till killed. And you have to have that conversation with that child about why that happened and how the people, her husband and everybody else, got off for what they did. These people are still living to this day. And these people are still around. And these people are grandparents, their great grandparents. And they do not want to have these conversations with their family members. They want to act like this. The whole preface around white folks is that this is not connected to me. I didn't do this, or this happened in the 1800s. This was so long ago. These people are still alive. we could count back a generation from the last person that's still alive. And the history is not distant, and no one wants, like, you have to accept that and admit that and live with that if you're having these conversations. And also to add to it, when we talk about policing, and the fact that the history of policing comes out of slave patrols, you got to have that conversation as well. The whole system of policing is built around oppressing Black people. And so when a white police officer kills a Black man, as Paul Vallis's son did in San Antonio, you now have to have a racial conversation about that. Whereas folks don't want to do that. Folks just want to say, well, he had a gun, and so the police shot him. No, that's a much deeper conversation that has to be had about the system of policing. But then when you question the system of policing, then you have people now that's growing up saying, well, I don't want to be a police officer. I don't know about that. That's kind of racist. It's kind of oppressive. It's all connected to one big thing. And that's, if you get rid of critical race theory at all ages, you don't have to have those difficult conversations.
Well, we'll see where Paul Vallis goes with this. I have watched with bemusement as he is trying to walk back some of the other daffy things he's done, Tiffany, going out to Wake, Illinois at their fundraiser over the summer, a really transphobic group, to preach how what they should do is align themselves. I'm not making this up. This is what the man said, align themselves up with the police unions to work against the teachers unions. This is what he said. And then when Kelly Garcia, shout out Kelly Garcia, broke the story for the Chicago Reader, he was like, oh, well, wait, I didn't know that it was a transphobic group. I never heard of Google. What, you can Google something and find out? Oh, wow.
It'll be interesting to see how much the Chicago press follows up on this issue with Vallis. You know, to see if they press him on this, or if they just go, oh yeah, well, you know, it's not a big deal. Let's move on. There's nothing to see here.
That's Vallas being Vallas.
Right, exactly.
You know, well, we'll see. I know one representative of the Chicago Press Corps that's going to press him on it. The Tribe. I think they're going to press him on it. Tiffany's already texting reporters. Get out there and ask Vallas a question about that.
Yeah, we'll just be ready for the trolls to attack us once again, and they'll show up again once we say something.
Yeah, come on, trolls. Leave them alone, all right? Dang, I mean, that was ridiculous. First of all, trollster, that one quote that you read didn't even address Vallas's point, trollster. Like, you made one other point. Vallas was talking about how white parents would not be able to, one more time. Before we leave, I'm going to ask Tiffany, before I let her go, please explain to me how teaching a kid about Rosa Parks will lead that kid to rebel against his parents' common sense and advice. One last chance, Tiffany, to explain this. It's something that exists in the mind of Paul Vallas. Help me out.
Because if I'm a young white child, why should I feel that my parents or my grandparents like treated this person wrongly and treated them like a dog and abused them and lynched them and killed them like intentionally? Why as a child do I want to think that? Why as a child do I want to grow up thinking of my parents and my grandparents and my great grandparents and my lineage in that way? Like, we're just nice people who are out here saving the world, and we brought Manifest Destiny here. We actually helped these Black people. We helped them get to where they are today. So why would we talk about hurting them? That's ridiculous.
And my nanny is Black, and she was always nice to me.
Right. I love my nanny.
Okay. I think I figured it out based on what you said, Tiffany. I think I figured it out. So essentially what Vallas is saying, and Paul, I'm just taking a trip through your brain. Oh, my goodness. Some of the DVDs you got in the 90s, Paul. Just kidding. I'm taking a trip through the Paul Vallas brain. And I think what he's saying is that if you teach white children that their white parents were part of a society that did bad things to Black people, then those white children will never believe anything the white parents do. And so they will, when the white parent says, take out the garbage, they'll say, no, you were bad to Black people. I am not going to take out the garbage. I think that's what's going on in the Paul Vallas brain, Tiffany. I want to thank you for helping me.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Otherwise translated is, I can't guilt my children into taking out the garbage because they think I'm a racist.
To which I would say, shut up and take out the garbage. And eat your broccoli.
And your child screams back, no, mom, you're a racist. That's like, people don't want that.
Yeah, I guess I can see the disruption right now at dinner tables throughout the city of Chicago as kids go, no, I'm not going to do it because you're a racist. You voted for Bernie Ebtin. Oh Lord. Tiffany, before I let you go, give out any information people need to know to find all that great stuff you guys are doing at Tribe. Spell the name. Yes. Some people may have trouble with the spelling of the name. So take it away. Give a plug to the Tribe. Go ahead.
You can read all of our excellent election coverage at the Tribe. That's thetribe.com. We have an election center on our site where you can find out what wards you live in. You can find out what police district you live in because we're voting for police district council members for the first time. We have a voter guide on there, thanks to Jim and the Chicago Reader, an excellent voter guide about, you know, who's running in the police district races, because the FOP has money and candidates in the police district races. So, you know, read up and get all the information that you need so you can make an educated decision when you go to the polls on February 28th, which is Tuesday, which is 6 days away.
An educated decision being different than what Chicagoans usually do when they go to the polls. It's our time to take it back. That's who I'm voting for.
We're taking Chicago back.
Where are they taking us back to? That's the other thing. Where are we going? That was so great. You know what I mean? Make Chicago great again, Monroe. That's funny. All right, Tiffany, I'm going to let you go before I subject you to Georgia grand jury talk. So thank get you. On with your day.
Good
and
to y'all, and it's good seeing you, Monroe. Always.
All right.
A pleasure. Okay.
Don't be a stranger, Tiffany. I'm going to bring you back to the show. Thank you very much. All right.
Good.
All right, Monroe, let's get down to business. The grand jury in Georgia that we ordinarily we could have spent an hour in that. But, you know, the Chicago mayoral election is not going to last forever, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll be coming back to.
Right. We'll be talking about it next week because we will have some results.
Yeah, we will have some results. No, we'll know that we'll. Well, they're saying that it's going to take a while because it's going to be so close. So they're going to have to count the ballots that come in through the mail. So it's not going to be like a usual thing where the election is called within 24 hours. But I think by this time next week, we'll probably know who came in first. At the very least. All right. So, wow.
Man, and this time next week, some of Trump's people may be indicted, including him.
This is deep, ladies and gentlemen. What's coming out of Georgia. So what happened was there's been an investigation by a special grand jury that was appointed by the prosecutor in Fulton County. And they were investigating what Trump did and when did he do it? What did he know and when did he know it? And what did all his little acolytes and allies know, and when did they know it regarding an attempt to subvert the process, the election process in Georgia, and take a state that voted for Joe Biden and turn it over to Donald Trump? And of course, on record, we already know that Trump attempted to do it because there's the recorded phone call that Trump made to the Secretary of State of Georgia, Brad Raffensperger, where he said, I need 1,000 votes or whatever it is. Just get me the 1,000 votes, which was the margin that Biden
11,870.
Wow.
What he needs.
That's what he needs.
He lost by 11,869. Yeah. So he just needed one more vote.
One more vote.
He lost at. It was supposed to be found.
It was supposed to be found. Yes. Just find me those votes. So for the last several weeks, there's been an investigation by a special jury, various MAGA folks, Lindsey Graham, Rudy Giuliani were brought down. Donnie Trump did not go testify before that jury. And then it was like yesterday, I think it was, or the day before. I can't remember, losing track of time. The young woman, Emily Coors is her name, who's the forewoman of the jury, sat down and gave interviews with various reporters. Monroe, I've never seen anything like it. Here's my mind blown. Never heard of grand jury.
Right. This is unprecedented.
Yeah.
For a grand jury.
And
those practitioners of the art of grand jury, their mind is triple blown. They can't believe it. Too bad you haven't seen. You should go to MSNBC or someplace and see the interview. This girl is so sweet. She's 30 years old, and she is like innocent and sweet. You don't detect any decisions made along political lines with this. But this is how the juries should act, and this is what they should be doing. She's a millennial, and she's thinking, this should all be open where people know what's going on instead of secret. So she was just spilling the beans all over the place. She said that there are a dozen indictments coming.
Yeah.
And she was asked specifically if one of them might be you know who.
Donnie, yeah.
And she says, I can't talk about that, but maybe.
To the point of her innocence, she's 30 years old, and she acknowledged that she did not vote in 2020.
Right.
Which, I mean, this kind of reminded me, we actually had this conversation on the mic when Alderman Patrick Daley Thompson of the 11th Ward was convicted of some corruption. I can't remember what the exact corruption was. There's so many corruption trials. One of the jurors interviewed by the Sun-Times, she was a 30-year-old, I want to say, from the suburbs, and she said she had never heard of the Dailies. Every time I couldn't believe it. Remember, I'm like, Monroe,
please explain to me, how can you be 30 years old and not have heard of the Dailies? And you said, well, she's from the suburbs. And like, well, they got news in the suburbs. You know?
Except the young people, yeah, that generation, they don't do news. They don't do, they do the internet. And so if it, and basically with the internet, it's mainly current stuff. I mean, very current stuff. This Coors girl, woman, 30-year-old, had not heard the get me the 11,870 votes. She had not heard that quote.
Yeah.
Been out there for 2 years. Yeah. And she hadn't heard it until the trial, the grand jury came forth. And that's when she first heard it. She didn't know it. She knew nothing about it before that. They live in a different world than we do.
Well, clearly she's not a listener to the Wednesday segment of Monroe Anderson and the Ben Jarofsky. Clearly she's not been listening to this podcast. Had she been listening to this podcast, it would be a different story. So it was the voice of innocence itself that made it clear that Donald Trump will probably be indicted in Georgia, unless the prosecutor there just gets too nervous, because it is kind of a scary thing to do. Let's, when you think about it, you're not just indicting Donald Trump; you're like whipping MAGA up into a frenzy. I don't know. Maybe Paul Vallis will issue a statement saying it's a witch hunt. Who knows how far to the MAGA side of thing he will go? And then essentially, MAGA just turns on you, and Fox turns on you, and you become the recipient of a lot of hostility.
Oh, Fox has its own problems right now. I don't know if you happen to see this or not, but come to behold, the Fox anchors were lying when they were telling people the election was stolen. They knew better. They knew it was crazy. And they were emailing each other saying as much, but then when they go on the air, it would be, and they're trying to steal the election from the president. it was so unsavory, so dishonest, so hypocritical. I mean, anything negative you want to call it, it works.
Well, let's get back to what you said about Paul Vallis when you kind of let him off the hook. We talked a lot about the idiocy of Paul Vallis's comments about critical race theories and how it's going to cause white kids to rebel against their parents and not eat their broccoli. And then you said, based on your knowledge of Paul, you don't think he really believes it. It's just some propaganda he's throwing out, some red meat, right, as they say, that he's throwing out to MAGA, his MAGA followers. And so essentially, that's what's been determined in the Dominion lawsuit, is that everyone from Tucker Carlson to Laura Ingraham, trying to remember any of the others.
Judge, whatever her name is.
The judge actually take, well, both these various personalities did not believe the nonsense that, right, Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani were spouting, but they felt compelled to repeat it because they didn't lose their audience and take a hit in the ratings battle against the other MAGA news outfit. And they were essentially saying they didn't believe it, but they said it anyway. So that's the Paul Vallis correlation. So if this if Trump is indicted, what's your thoughts about the impact it'll have on the Republican primaries, the Republican decision as to who they'll run against Joe Biden?
You know, we have so many cards up in the air now. It's hard to predict now. Because you have Fox may be imploding as we speak as a result of this Dominion lawsuit that's happening. So if they fall apart, then MAGA won't have the voice the propaganda instrument that they've used so well. If Trump gets indicted, he has at least two serious indictments, maybe three or four. if he gets indicted in two of those, then that's going to have some impact. Some of the players who want to be run against Trump or want to be the candidate are up to their chins in the scandal with the denial about whether Trump won the race or not. So it's so many things, and all these things are racing towards some inflection point.
Yeah.
And it's going to be explosive.
Well, the decision, let's say, for instance, Nikki Haley, former governor's state of South Carolina, just announced that she's running for the Republican nomination. I watched her campaign announcement. What a piece of work that was. Right. So if you're Nikki Haley and Donald Trump is indicted, and one of the chief pieces of evidence they use is the phone call that we all know about, so you can't ignore it and avoid it. Do you keep a hold of MAGA by going, this is a disgraceful witch hunt and they've overreached? Or do you stick with the law enforcement and go, well, there's clear evidence that Donald Trump tried to overturn an election, and I stand by my fellow prosecutors and law enforcement officials and their efforts to unroot it. And then she will have a decision to make, as will Ron DeSantis and every other Republican who runs. So what do you think you're going to do?
She's not going to go that far. Yeah, she's not going to denounce Trump. DeSantis is trying to figure out how he can do it and not lose the base himself. So what we're going to end up with, I think, as things are developing now, is a Republican who has sort of walked the line, like a Chris Christie or the guy from Ohio, I've forgotten his name now, who ran for president.
John Kasich.
Yeah, John Kasich. You know, we're going to end up with one of those types, I think, as the candidate.
You really believe that you're going to get, I don't even know what to call them, like a quote-unquote moderate? They're really not even that moderate. You think you're going to, but they are moderate if you compare them to, let's say,
they're not crazy.
Ron DeSantis. Right. Yeah, not right. Insane.
They're just garden variety Republicans.
I don't think MAGA will tolerate that. I don't, and MAGA controls it. I believe it'll have to be someone like Ron DeSantis, who came to suburban Elmhurst earlier this week and just, threw tons of red meat at the MAGA crowd. It'll be someone like him. I can't imagine.
They're shrinking, and we still have a year to go, a little more than a year and a half to go. They're shrinking. More crap is coming out, and all the benefits that Sleepy Joe slipped through the Congress are now actually beginning to kick in. And so those who were angry may not be as angry as they were.
All right, Monroe is just so eager to take a victory lap for Sleepy Joe. But before, I've already asked you to help me understand Paul Vallis's mind. All right, now you got to help up with Nikki Haley. All right, so we took a trip through Paul Vallis's brain a little earlier. Now I'm going to go to Nikki Haley. I got this quote from her announcement. All right, and in her announcement speech, which was just filled with the American flag and this, that, and the other thing, and how great and wonderful she is. She said she likes to stand up to bullies. Okay. She goes, I hate bullies.
Right.
When you kick back, it hurts more if you're wearing heels. That's what she said. It's like she's a woman kicking back. And I'm like, I know I'm very literal minded, Monroe. I know people, Ben, you're way too literal minded, but I'm trying to figure out, how does it hurt more when you kick back if you're wearing heels? The heel is like not going to be the part that kicks you. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it depends on what type of kick you deliver. However, what she was doing was borrowing from Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire.
Yeah.
And Ginger did the same thing Fred did, but she did it backwards and in heels.
Okay, I get that. It's harder to dance in heels than in flat. I get that. But is she saying she's like doing a karate kick?
This woman is not creative. She's not imaginative. Yeah. She's a go along, get along, Republican.
Yeah.
And she's not going to rock the boat. And she's not going to be president. She's not going to be the nominee. That she may, and this is what she is running for, is vice president.
You've been saying that consistently. You've been saying that consistently for several weeks. Right. But I see her. So if she's doing a karate kick like Bruce Lee, then okay. Now I see. Thank you for. Hey, look, between you and Tiffany, I figured out what's going on in Paul Vallis's brain, and now thanks to you, it's a karate kick. Now I understand what Nikki Haley was getting there. All right, let's close by allowing you to do a victory celebration. Monroe has been. This goes back 3 years.
Yes.
I was Bernie. Monroe was Biden. Monroe was telling me. I was unfair to.
I wasn't Biden. I was saying that for you poor Bernie people,
the Bernie bros,
you romanticists. I was telling you Bernie was not going to be the guy.
Yes, you were.
Although Bernie is very happy, much of Bernie's platform is Biden's and the Democrats. So. He got his way. He just didn't get to do it himself.
Yeah.
So he won, so to speak. But the thing is, as I told you back then, had Bernie been the nominee, Republicans would have had hammer and sickles on every advertisement they had.
Yeah.
The communists.
Yeah. They're trying to do that to Biden, and it really just, I mean, it's a real hard sell with.
They can't do it.
Yeah.
They can't do it. You know, they keep trying and trying and trying, but Biden is Scranton Joe. He tells his stories, and he's a people person. Yeah. I mean, he is really a very good people person. So even the people that don't like him. If they've met him and know him, but he's just a decent human being, unlike that other guy.
And the other point that Monroe made to me this morning about Joe Biden is that the one thing that could go against him is if he just has more of an obvious mental decline. He's 80 years old, I think. And I immediately said to Monroe, I said to you what I said to you every time you raise this or anytime anybody raises this, that Americans don't care. They elected Ronald Reagan when he has Alzheimer's. And they elected and reelected and elected and reelected daily, who couldn't put three words together. Okay. So they don't care about coherence. They don't care if you're mentally sharp. If you can just project this image of competence or popularity, they're lining up. Monroe, they're lining up. They're ready. Listen, look at Maggie getting ready. You hear white people on the north side getting ready. White Democrats, white liberals getting ready to vote for Paul Vallis. So, you know, Monroe.
Well, that's because of crime, Ben. That is going to put those black people in jail.
Unbelievable. One more time, ladies and gentlemen. There was crime in the 90s where you Northsiders were voting for Richard M. Daley. Just saying. Yeah. So, all right. Very good, Monroe. Joe Biden, your guy, had a good week. Went to Warsaw, gave a speech in the rain. Looking very presidential. And I got a lot of lefties sending me emails and tech that I should dive into the who blew up the pipeline, the Nord pipeline. And I know there's a lot of folks on the left that just are not buying Joe Biden at all. The far left, the far, far left.
Yeah, I know. They sore losers.
These guys are to the left.
They were believing that fairy tales do come true. Real politics is what it is.
Yeah, real politics.
Joe is the man for this era.
All right, Monroe, we'll close it down there. Thank you very much. Also, thank you for helping me bring Tiffany to the show. She did a great job.
Yeah, she did.
you know. And yeah, I love those chat, but make her a regular on the Ben Jarofsky Show. Monroe Anderson, thank you very much. And also want to thank producer Chris for doing an outstanding job, as he always does. Producer Chris, give yourself a raise, take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.
And don't forget, you can catch previous Ben Jarofsky shows, Benny J bonus interviews, and so much more at chicagoreader.com. And also find the Ben Jarofsky Show all over the internet on your favorite podcasting platforms.